they thought they needed to be better, and they thought that you needed to be, some of them were like, oh, I thought I had to be a member. I thought I had to wear certain things. Like one of them had jeans on the other day for the coaching. And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I had to come straight from wherever. And I was like, it's fine. Like, what are you apologizing for? She's like, oh, I've got jeans on. And I was like, so? I was like, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. She's like, oh, I'm not supposed to wear jeans. And I was like, well, on the golf course. But I was like, you're not on the golf course. Like, what's, like, and she was so apologetic. And I was like, it's absolutely fine. You can wear whatever you want. Like, I just want you to be comfortable so you can actually enjoy playing.
Hi, and welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the community of golfers who are unified in their belief that golf is good for you. Welcome back to all of our long-standing GYH community members and listeners. Warm welcome also to those of you who are new to this community and podcast. I am your host, Chris Lynch. Join me and invited guests as we share stories around how golf is helping us to live happy, healthy, and fulfilled lives. If you'd like to join our community, why not follow us on your podcast platform of choice? We're available these days on all the major podcast platforms, and by clicking on that follow button, it will make sure that you're notified of new episodes as soon as they drop. Do also check out our back catalogue of journal articles. The GYH journal is available at golfyourselfhealthy.com. The link to our website, to the podcast on other podcast platforms, the links to our social media channels, the whole shooting match, all of that is available in the show notes. So do go and check that out. Now, during the conversation, at the end of the conversation, whenever takes your fancy. Golf is everyone's game. That's a belief that we hold here at GYH, but it's certainly also a core belief that is held by Jordan Ryan, this week's guest. Jordan, these days, is a PGA qualified coach. She teaches out of Park Golf Club in Newport, South Wales, which was the venue for this particular conversation. We recorded it a few months ago now, and we recorded it just a few weeks ahead of Jordan taking on the captaincy role for the Wales girls team at the Girls and Boys Home Internationals, which took place this year at Conway Golf Club in North Wales. And so part of this conversation is not only Jordan talking about the pride that she felt in taking on that role, what the role meant to her, and how she hoped to be a really inspiring role model and leader to the girls, but also the motivation for doing the role sounded very much like it was preceded by Jordan's successful elite amateur career, where she herself represented Wales at international level on multiple occasions. And Jordan also was previously on the LET Access Tour, which is the pathway tour to the Ladies European Tour. But in more recent years, Jordan has turned her focus and attentions to coaching, something that you can tell from listening to her she really enjoys and really loves. It sounds very much like she gets a lot out of helping her teaching students, her clients, to get enjoyment out of golf. But she very much recognises that in order for that to happen, the right culture needs to be created around golf. People need to feel welcome, included. They need to feel a sense of belonging. And it sounds to me very much like she takes that responsibility very seriously. And I think it's fair to say, based on the conversation I've had with her, but also knowing plenty of other people who know and speak very highly of Jordan, it's clear that not only does she advocate for inclusivity, she role models it too. It's all well and good, I think, when people talk the talk, but Jordan certainly walks the walk as well. So it is a really great conversation. There's so much that we cover, and I am convinced that you are really going to enjoy and get a lot out of this conversation. So without any further ado, let's tee off and head over into the conversation. Jordan, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about Jordan Ryan.
Okay.
So I'd love to know just about your beginnings in golf and kind of just take us on a bit of a potted history of your introduction to the game and okay. kind of what the game's given you and kind of a sense of what it means to you and things.
Okay. I probably got into golf a bit later than, well, the majority younger ones now. My dad plays and always had played. So that's how I got into it. I was probably about, 12-ish maybe, but probably didn't start playing properly for like another 2 years after that. But I started playing at Newport Golf Club, played within the junior section there, which was great. Like we had junior coaching as a group, and on Monday nights we'd have coaching, and then like once you were a little bit older, you'd go and play on the golf course instead of actually doing the coaching. Like we'd have junior competitions, and it was like 9 holes or 18 or whatever, and then everyone would go in afterwards, and we'd have they'd give us chips and bread and butter for our dinner, basically.
Good nutritious meal.
Yeah, but it was like, it was great. Like you do whichever bit of the junior part you do, and then we'd all go in together afterwards. But yeah, and then like I said, probably didn't start playing properly until I was maybe 13, 14-ish, maybe. Like I think I got asked to play for the county, like the under 16s team. And I remember it was all the way up in Bull Bay. And I remember being like, oh, I don't know if I want to go all the way up there. Like I'd never played for anything before, really. Mum and dad basically said to me, just try it. If you don't like it, you'd have to do it again. But like you might enjoy it. So did it. And I'm pretty sure like our team won or whatever. But we won like quite comfortably, if that makes sense. And like obviously we all really enjoyed it. Obviously at that age it's not necessarily about winning, but like we all did really well and we were all like really confident, like, yeah, we can do this. And it was really enjoyable, and it kind of just went on from there, then playing club competitions, playing county. And then I probably played like my first Welsh Girls when I was about 14, 15 maybe, and then became part of the Welsh setup. So I ended up being in like the academy squad, which was a mixed squad. And then for 1 year, then the next year I was in the girls squad, which was probably would have been an under 18 squad, I think. But it was a bit different to how it is now. So we had like a south squad and a north squad. So I was in the south girls squad. And then the following year, then I moved up to ladies and then was in ladies then until I turned pro, basically, which was great. And obviously played everything for Wales, really. Home internationals, Europeans, all the way through to like World Amateur Championships. And then I turned pro. When did I turn pro? Probably about 3 and a bit years ago now. Went to Q School, played LET Access, and had a full card LET Access, had like a ever so slight partial category on LET, but never actually played LET. And then did that for 2.5 years. And then in October, I played my last event on Access, but I kind of fell out of love with it a little bit, in the sense of I'd had enough of living out of a suitcase for a while. So took a break for basically like halfway through July into the start of August, decided I was going to do my PGA, went back, played the last 3 or 4 events, probably had my best events the whole time I was on tour in terms of results. Again, probably because I was a lot more chilled then, because I'd made my decision. And then started my PGA in October. And I found out on Monday, I just passed my first year of my PGA. So I can do my second year as of October.
Congrats.
Thank you very much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Listening to you talk about that journey, something that fascinates me just hearing back. So if I play back, what I'm hearing is, you know, introduced to it through family, because mm-hmm. family play the game, yeah. starts out quite, you know, as a young person, yep. getting into it, quite like you're just doing it, you're enjoying mm-hmm. it. But then the way you talk about the build up to getting to sort of LET level, mm-hmm. for example, sounds like really matter of fact in terms of the way yeah. you describe it. Because like in my head, just as a mere mortal, someone that's never played at the standard that you have, I kind of idolize it in a way. And I kind of go like, oh, wow, you know, it's like this big crescendo and this build up to mm-hmm. it. Maybe you don't remember it like that. It just happened.
Yeah, I guess I did school up until 18. So I did GCSEs, did A-levels. And then I kind of, I had a few offers to go to the States to go to college and stuff, but I kind of decided against it. I'd got my A-levels and I passed everything. And I kind of, me and my parents agreed, like, get your sort of qualifications, whatever, just in case you do ever want to go on to do something else. So I've got them rather than having to go back to school and redoing stuff and everything. And I agreed with that, if that it made sense. Like, I had enough time to study and golf at that point. And like, I've worked since I was like 15, I've worked in Newport for a while in the pro shop. And then once I was old enough, I worked on the bar. So it wasn't just school golf. I wanted my own money and stuff like that as well. I'm fortunate enough that my parents obviously supported me as much as they can. But also it's quite nice having your own independence in that sense. But I knew that that was like Neil, my coach, once I turned 18, it was kind of like a 5-year plan almost, which sounds quite extreme, but like kind of just mapping out. And obviously things change, don't they? But it was just very matter of fact that I wanted to turn pro. So from probably 18, even though I wasn't a pro, it was my job. So it kind of, I guess it does change then, isn't it? So yes, I still enjoy playing golf, and I did enjoy playing golf like then as well, but it's different. It's a different switch. So I guess it is very matter of fact, the same way that you'd say you go to work.
Yeah. And actually, again, what I find really interesting and what I'm getting out of what you're saying is it sounds to me like you're really very much comfortable and at peace with not going down that kind of LET, playing out in the pro tour. Because we were talking about something before we kind of hit record on this thing about, like, you know, being asked if like you didn't make it there. Yeah. So what is that? But actually you sound like in a really upbeat and positive.
Yeah, I am. Like, I didn't lose my card. Like, I kept my card. I just made the decision to stop playing. That sounds quite dramatic. Not stop playing golf, but just I'd made the decision that I had 2 weeks in Spain or a week in Spain at the end of the year in October, and that was they were going to be my last events. And then I was going to start my PGA. That doesn't mean I won't play again. I don't think I will. Like, I'm in terms of on tour, I'm very content coaching. I'm actually really enjoying it, but I've recently, because I had a bit of a break then playing, because I'd come back, I went straight into my first year of uni. So I'm working, I'm studying, it's quite full on. The last thing I wanted to do was go and play golf at the end of the day, because I've had a full day of somewhat golf anyway, whether that be in the pro shop or coaching. And then I probably didn't hit a golf ball from October to January, maybe even February, and really didn't even want to. So didn't miss it whatsoever. But then the last kind of, I don't know, 3-4 weeks maybe, if I've had like playing lessons, I've, depending on who it is, I've played with them out on the course, or like I've hit a few balls and stuff, because I've got a PGA event. I've got my first PGA event tomorrow actually at RADA. So obviously I need to not be as rusty as I have been the last couple of weeks to actually play. And that's been quite nice, just playing very, very socially. And it's kind of like even tomorrow, I probably haven't done anywhere near as much practice as I probably should in comparison to what obviously I used to do to then try and compete. But it's just nice being back playing, I think, but in a very social way rather than it, or not necessarily social, but like stress-free, I guess, is probably the best way. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, yes, I'd like to play nicely, and I've got my group for the pro-am. I don't know who they are, but I'll meet them tomorrow, and it'd be nice to play well for them, because like if they play nicely, like they'll probably get nice prizes for being part of the pro-am and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's not paying my bills anymore, so it's just, it'll be very nice to play and with no sort of consequences to it.
Yeah. Just before we maybe go into kind of like the coaching side of what you do now, again, I get the impression, if I've heard you right, that what you did in playing LET, LET Access, has allowed you to travel around a bit, see a few different places. I mean, between the traveling and experiencing different cultures or different places, and just the general process of being involved in that side of golf, like, what kind of life lessons do you think that's all taught you?
Life lessons, what, from traveling around?
Well, no, just in the broad sense of whether it's the travel or just like, you know, kind of, because again, you know, you've, the way I rightly or wrongly, the way I think about elite golf is, and this is where I get fascinated about what happens for people after they step out of that side of golf, is what are the transferable skills, if you like? Do you know what I mean? Or the life lessons that you've taken out that you can still apply in terms of as a coach now? Or
I guess, well, just chill out. I guess like life's too short, isn't it? Like to worry about, like, yes, it was my job. And
is it naturally intense being involved in,
in
that environment?
Yeah. And I think what makes it more intense is like coming back to work in a golf club, which everyone's lovely. Everyone's so supportive and everyone cares. Like if I've done well or if I haven't done well, if I've been away, they just want to know how I've got on. And but like sometimes if you've had an awful week and you come back and then you do a shop shift and people are asking you, how'd you get on? How do you know that everyone has an opinion on it, even though they obviously haven't been this or seen it kind of thing. And almost like everyone expects you to do really well, which is actually quite nice in the sense of that they believe in you that you can do well. But obviously if you've had a tough week and then you come back and you say your week hasn't gone as well as what you'd like it to be or whatever. And then so-and-so says to you, well, what happened? What did you do that for? And I'm like, well, I didn't mean to. But obviously they mean well, and they're almost like, it's quite funny because they're almost shocked that you haven't done as well as what they think you can do, which is, again, is nice because they do expect more of you. But sometimes you just want to come back and not talk about it, don't you? But the best thing...
They don't let you.
No, exactly. The best thing I did as an amateur, I worked at Newport Golf Club for a while, and then I worked in the pro shop, and then I worked on the bar and did a few different jobs at Newport. But then my sister got a summer job between finishing her A-levels and then going to uni at her kennels. And it was plain and simple. It was hard work in terms of physical, but it was like you went in... it's like a boarding kennel. So like people go on holidays, they put the dogs in there just for like a week or so, 2 weeks, whatever, and then come and get them afterwards. So every day you'd have to clean the kennels, walk the dogs, feed them, obviously. And then at the end of the day, you'd tuck them in ready for bed, basically. That was the extent. But it was a lot of cleaning. So it was quite physical in that sense and a lot of steps you'd do and stuff. But she went to uni then. And I was like, do you know what? That sounds absolutely delightful. Because all I needed was money to obviously play. And I was like, I'd had enough of trying to play and trying to compete. And then obviously going back to work in the golfing environment as well. Because as I said, everyone has an opinion and everyone wants to know. Whereas like when I'd go to work, when you go to work, because it was just a means to an end for me to afford to play golf, it didn't matter what I was doing. It was just money. So I was like, do you know what? I'm going to do that. So I had her job when she went to uni, and I worked in the kennels for probably just over a year. And it was great because I could kind of pick up whatever shifts I, within reason, what I wanted. They were good as gold, as long as I gave them my dates in advance that I was playing a tournament this week, whatever. And it was amazing because I went to work. None of them knew anything about golf. So they might ask like, if I'd been, I don't know, say I'd been competing in Spain, they might ask me how was Spain, but all they meant was the weather nice and like, what did you have for food and stuff? They didn't care what I did with golf. Like obviously if I came back and I was like, oh, I won last week, they'd be like, oh, well done. And that was the end, which was, it was very sort of refreshing because it was like a complete switch off. It was a complete break. But then, yeah, it has its positives and its negatives in that sense. But yeah, to answer your question, that life's too short in the sense of to be worrying it. Like there's absolutely nothing you can do. If you've had a bad round or you've had a bad hole, like, yes, it's annoying. Yes, it's a bit disappointing because obviously you've done loads of hard work, but you can't change it, can you? It's done, which is like, I guess that is a very much a life lesson in itself. Like once something's done, yes, you might be able to fix it, like go out the next day. And if you shoot 5-6 under, that will definitely help correct the day before, but you can't actually physically change the day before, can you?
No, totally. I love that story you've just shared because a couple of things spring to mind for me. So like for me, as I was telling you before about like my lifetime, if you like, in golf and my journey through golf, it's really quite different, I suppose, to yours. Mm-hmm. But me now doing a golf podcast, it's all very novel and new. But it does occur to me sometimes, I'm like, you need to have stuff outside of your 100%. Golf as well. Because you would just, you know, and also what you were saying there about kind of like, I just hadn't thought or appreciated how doing it for other people, because like you're the competitor and you'll want to compete and do well for Jordan, but then you're turning up and everyone else is like, it's almost like it, whether you like it or not, it almost adds a level of pressure.
Of course it does. There's added expectations to it, which again, all of it comes from a very good place. Well, the majority of it comes from a good place, but it's still hard work.
Yeah.
In that, the hard work is probably not the right way to say it, but it does add to it. It definitely doesn't help.
No, I get it. Totally. Let's talk about your coaching then. Maybe just kick us off, like, kind of who do you coach? Is there a widespread spectrum of...
Yeah, but everyone really.
In terms of levels.
Yeah. So started out coaching probably on and off about 2 years ago now. But then obviously when I did decide to do my PGA, I very like fully opened my diary up and sort of everyone... I just opened my diary basically, and then whoever wants to book in can, which at the start I was very much just like, I'll just open as much time as I can because I probably won't get that many. So just they can have whatever spots they want, obviously just trying to build up my clientele and stuff. But touch wood, it's been I've been busy, and probably a lot more people than I thought would have booked in, like especially straight away, which is good. And I mean, wide range as far as like juniors through to the vets here, the seniors here, and as well as like I've been, like I was saying to you earlier, I've been doing some of the new to golf women's classes, which is great. Like I've just finished my last one now, which I do like a block of six lessons. So it's like a 6 week course, an hour a week. And I had 16 new women in my last one. They'd never played golf before. And now all of them can absolutely hit the ball up in the air, at least sort of 80 yards, I say, maybe even more, which in 6 weeks, that's amazing. They've done so well. They've all been practicing outside of the class. We finished last night and they were straight away. They were like, when are you doing your next one? Can we do some more? They're just so keen. But we've got, where I work here, we've got quite a small women's section. They're all lovely, but it's just very small. Whereas like growing up playing at Newport, we had a massive women's section when I was growing up. So it's a very different sort of dynamic down here. Whereas down here, even though it is quite small, everyone mixes. So all the women will play in the comps. We have club comps rather than men's comps. And there are a few women's comps, but it's the women can play in the club comps. So everyone mixes. So it's kind of, even though we have got a small section, it's almost like it's just one section. So by doing the women's classes, I'm trying my best to add to build the women's section, but also to make the club bigger. Does that make sense? So everyone can continue to mix, which is hopefully the way it should be going in the future anyway.
Yeah, because what I observe is, and again, in the time I've been doing this podcast, meeting people and things, is that which is a very natural human thing. Like, so for instance, like, do you find, is it mostly females that book in to no, or you have men as well?
I have way more men.
Really?
Yeah, like all of the women that ask for lessons that come down here will see that there's a female pro, and the majority of them will then book with me.
Mm.
But if you looked at my sort of diary, there's probably easily 90% of them are men. So yeah, I thought it would be a lot more women, whether that's because there's not that many women down here at the moment anyway.
Mm.
But yeah.
So then maybe the question I want to ask you is, what is the key to getting a diverse mix or the most inclusive kind of atmosphere within a golf?
Yeah, I think the women's groups are important in the sense of starting them off, because I was saying to the group the other day, because it finished, and next week they were saying they're all just going to, I do it Wednesday nights, and they said, oh, we're all just going to come down anywhere and practice, even if there's not, because it was the end of the 6 weeks. And I was like, amazing. And then some of them were like, oh no, like, oh, we can't just go on the main bit of the driving range. And I was like, of course you can. I was like, why can't you? And they were just like, oh no, because, oh no, we're not good enough for that yet. And I was like, it's funny, like the difference between like men and women in the attitude. Like we get so many groups of men or boys on the driving range who could have either never played golf or nowhere near elite, shall we say. Sorry, who have played but are nowhere near elite, just very social club golfers, or not even club golfers. They probably just come down the driving range, the women would hit it just as good, if not better, in that group. But they don't care. They just want to come down. They just want to play with their mates, or they want to get better or whatever. Whereas like the women in the group were straight away kind of like, oh no, we can't do that. And I was like, why? Like, of course you can. Like, that the driving range is the place to get better and also to socialize with the other women that are in your, that you've met through this process. Cause like none of them are friends. They've all met doing that. And whereas like they didn't realize that they could. And I was like, but why? But again, it's kind of the whole, they thought they needed to be better and they thought that you needed to be, some of them were like, oh, I thought I had to be a member. I thought I had to wear certain things. Like one of them had jeans on the other day for the coaching. And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I had to come straight from wherever. And I was like, it's fine. Like, what are you apologizing for? She's like, oh, I've got jeans on. And I was like, so? I was like, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. She's like, oh, I'm not supposed to wear jeans. And I was like, well, on the golf course. But I was like, you're not on the golf course. Like, what's, like, and she was so, she was like, so apologetic. And I was like, it's absolutely fine. You can wear whatever you want. Like, I just want you to be comfortable so you can actually enjoy playing and stuff.
Yeah, but that example to me just talks to this, like, golf's got almost like an uncomfortable history.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, but that, how, for want of a better word, powerful is that, that that's playing on someone's mind because it's just been built into their head that, like, yeah, that's golf and you
absolutely
can't do this and you can't do that. But I guess the reason I was kind of asking about this, mixing everyone in together versus, like, having very clearly delineated men's and women's groups is, I'm slowly realizing in golf that actually that kind of having men with men and women with women is actually sometimes quite a good thing, and it has its place, for example, to ensure shared experience, comfort,
absolutely,
you know, because that's a great starting point. Mm-hmm. And then maybe in time, if the conditions are right,
yeah,
and the culture, mm-hmm, by the way, in the club, yeah, as well is right, then everyone can, yeah, you're playing mixed medals or you're, mm-hmm, playing whatever, you know, but
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
I think I'm curious about it because I see how, you know, in the sense of, say, diversity and inclusion, there can maybe be a tendency sometimes to almost want to force a situation where you're trying to mix everyone, mm-hmm, together. But actually, if the conditions aren't right from the beginning,
no,
then that's not, no, necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I like I said, I had 16 women in that class, but I guarantee I probably wouldn't have even had half if I'd said it was a mixed beginners class, because they wouldn't have felt, some of them would have been fine, but they wouldn't have felt comfortable to come and learn a new skill when it's not just women. And that might change in the future, but for the time being, that's not where we're at in the world, which is fine. Like, it could be the same for some men. If I did an all men's beginner group, I might get more than if it was a mixed class, or until they're ready, until they feel comfortable enough to do it amongst their peers to start off with. And then once they're ready, once they're good to go, then they'll probably feel a bit more comfortable to mix. And once they are ready and they do feel like that, then I think it's only beneficial to mix them, whether that be different abilities, whether that be male, female, whether that be juniors, adults. I think once you get to a certain level, but again, it doesn't have to be a high level. It's just, you are just competent enough to get yourself around a golf course. That's all you need.
Yeah, completely. I was saying to you before that, you know, the central theme on this podcast is about golf being good for you,
mm-hmm,
well-being in many, many, golf is good for you in so many different ways. And I think maybe I'll ask you this question less from the perspective of your own view on it, because I think some of the things and experiences you've already shared have kind of talked to that. But I maybe would ask you it from, like, how is golf good for you and how do you see that from the perspective of the people that you coach? Is there, like, any one story that comes to mind where you've been coaching someone where they come to you and tell you about how, do you know what, Jordan, this is what this game's giving to me, and, do you know, or things that you, sign bites that you pick,
yeah,
up on, or things that you observe when you watch people and coach them and how you see golf being good for them?
Well, I guess in a social way, but even I had an older man book a few lessons, and lovely, lovely guy, and I've probably given him 3 or 4 lessons now, and then he asked to go on the golf course to do a playing lesson. I was like, yeah, of course. So I got, there's a bit more chatting when you're walking in between shots and stuff rather than just on the range, and he was saying that he just wants to get better so he can get himself around the golf course. So same, very similar to what I was saying about the women, getting them just so they are comfortable enough to go around the golf course and to feel confident enough, I guess, to go out there. But he was saying the same, that he wanted to be able to go out and play with his sons, and his a few of his friends already play here. And he was chatting to me about the fact that his wife had died 2 years ago, I think roughly about 2 years ago. And he said, so he was like, it just means that I have something else to do, because obviously there's a big part of his life that has gone then. So he said, he was like, this is something that I can do and I can do for himself, which is obviously different to then what he, for what he's done for the last, I think he said they were married for like 50 odd years or something, which is, it's a long time, isn't it, of something, and now it's gone. So we wanted something to do that was like, obviously it's never going to replace that, but it was just something new to do, to how to spend his time. And he wanted to be able to enjoy himself doing it rather than worrying that he was going to sort of make a fool out of himself, which he's more than good enough, which I think he realized when we actually went out on the golf course, that he is more than good enough to be out there. But again, it's more of a social thing, isn't it? For especially for him, for everyone, everyone has a social aspect to it. It doesn't matter whether you're in the elite part or whether you're in the beginner part, there's different circles, isn't there, that you'll make friends. Just because I've played for Wales and played on tour or whatever, that doesn't mean that just because someone's off a high handicap doesn't mean that I've not made friends with them. Does that make sense? That's the sort of the beauty of golf. You can mix with everyone, can't you? Like, I was trying to explain that to the women, the purpose of the handicap is that everyone can play with everyone. It doesn't matter what your handicap is. That's the point of it. You could play with someone who's been playing, who's just got their handicap and it's quite high, and play with someone who's, I don't know, off scratch. They get way more shots than you, and that levels it out. So you can go and play together.
Yeah, absolutely. So then this next question is about you, and it relating back to your golf. So this is probably one of my favorite parts of this podcast. I call it the eagle has landed, right? So it's asking you to talk us through a certain shot that you've hit, it's a shot you've hit in a set of circumstances. It could be casual golf, it mm-hmm. could be competitive golf, something that shot just means so much to you. It conjures up great memories and nostalgia, for example.
Oh, that's a tough one. I've played a lot of golf. I guess my last ever home internationals. So my last time playing for Wales, we were at Woodall Spa and we played, it was Ireland. We played Ireland, and because of the weather, we kind of swapped around the format and we kind of swapped it around basically. So we did the foursomes the day before, but anyway, playing the singles match and played against one of the Irish girls, and she's, I don't know, ranked like top 50 in the world or something like that. She's great. Like, she plays LET now. She's really good. And I hold my pitch shot into the last hole to win. So I hold it for an eagle, and all of the girls were around, like all of my team, all, because we were the last match out on the course as well. So all of Ireland were out, all of Wales were out. Paul, our coach, was there, like our Welsh coach and everything. And obviously, like, it was amazing because it was my last ever point. So it meant I won my last point for Wales in my singles. I obviously beaten a great player. Like, we'd had a good game all day, and I beat it all time, sorry, that the whole round. I'd won my match, but obviously everyone was there as well. So it was like, it was just nice. It was like amazing in that sense. But yeah, and it was just like a nice way to kind of tick off amateur golf, I guess, in that sense. And especially playing for Wales, like I played for Wales for so many years and was part of that team, like quite a sort of a core part of that team for so many years. It was nice just to finish on a high, I guess.
Yeah. Because I'm big on the feelings that golf can give you, especially mm-hmm. when you get those ecstatic highs. So, like, in a few words, what were the feelings when you either hold it or then the moment of celebration afterwards? How did you feel?
Just really, really happy, I guess. But like, it was just such an amazing feeling. I think because everyone was there, like, it was great anyway. Like, even if it's not in a match, even if you're just going out for a knock and you hold a shot, it's great, isn't it? but the fact that like everyone was there and everyone kind of celebrated it as well, and like very emotional as well, like afterwards, because like Paul came over afterwards and sort of gave me a big hug and said like, well done, and sort of, but also well done for like my whole sort of amateur career, if that makes sense.
Was he the head of the
he was the women's coach,
women's
yeah.
coach, yeah.
And like, just yeah, very emotional in the sense, because obviously it was like, that was the end
close of a chapter,
yeah, very much
in your
so.
Life.
Yeah, very much so. And it was great. It was great. Emotional in a good way. I loved playing for Wales. And I'm, like I mentioned to you earlier, about, which I'm guessing you'll mention in a minute, about the girls' captaincy, but I'm so glad to be part of it again. Just, I know I'm not competing, but just being part of Team Wales again, I'm just really looking forward to that. Just because I, even though golf is an individual sport, and obviously when you play on tour, it is very individual. Don't get me wrong, I had a great group of girls that I traveled with. I guess in some way you are like a little team then, because, well, you literally spend the whole summer with them. Like, you live with them for the whole summer, country to country. But it is, it's only you on that golf course. Whereas like when you're part of a team like Team Wales, then you're traveling together and you're playing for yourself, but you're playing for each other as well. Because at the end of the day, if you win your point, but no one else does, and vice versa, if they win their points, they've won them and you haven't. So then you all add them up together at the end, don't you? So, which is, yeah, I'm glad to be back part of that.
That's great. That's really cool. What's especially cool about that story is that's the first actual eagle story that we've heard in this segment.
I didn't even realise that yet.
No, that's absolutely brilliant.
That's
brilliant. You're right. I was about to bring up the fact that you've just taken on the captaincy of Wales Girls, right?
Yes.
So tell us about that and what that role will then mean to you, I suppose.
So this year, the RNA changed the rule, because when I was growing up, the captain of the team had to be an amateur. They could never be a pro, but they changed the rule that it can be a pro. So I'm going to be the girls' captain, and then Louise is the women's captain, but we're both PGA pros, or I'm training to be, and I think she's obviously qualified. Like, we are pros, and we've played in our own rights before, and now coming back as a captain is, as I said, I'm just really glad to be part of that team again. As I said, I'm not playing, but it is, the captain is still a vital part of it in that sense, like, as well as the coach. And I think Paul's going to be on that trip. I think it is anyway. But yeah, I'm just really looking forward to being part of it. And we've got home internationals at the start of August, which will be up in Conway for the girls team, which is the under 18s team. We've got quite a young team this year. They're all very good, but it is going to be a young team. So I think for a lot of them, it'd be an amazing experience for them, and they'll gain a lot of experience from it, which I guess we'll all kind of be learning, because yes, I've done it as a player, but I've never done it from the other side. So I can obviously use my experiences as a player to help me in that role. But again, it is a very new role. So yeah, I'll be learning as much as them, I think.
Yeah, no, it's I'm sure it'll be a fantastic experience for you. And like I said, if my advice helps in any possible way, it's to your team, which is hit it straight, keep it in the fairway, because the rough there is so hard there at the moment. So
keep it in play.
Yeah. And like I said, I was telling you before, I did the community golf instructor training there, and I played Conway with Ross Bebbington, who's the pro there. And I've given him the nickname Ross the Radar Bebbington, because I've never seen someone to be able to ball spot. I mean, I spray it off the tee at the best of times, but he found it every single place.
Time.
So if he's not in the pro shop that day, then I'm sure he'll be a ball spotter for the team.
I think it's a skill in itself, isn't it? Spotting people's shots.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So, I mean, just thinking of that then, I mean, just again, kind of thinking about how those that you're going to be captaining, they looking to you as their captain, you have been in their shoes before. So is there any kind of, like, you know, what are you going to say to them? What advice are you going to have for them before are you expecting them to have some nerves? Did you have nerves, for example, when you were representing your country in that?
Yeah, of course. Like, it's only natural, isn't it? I think everyone sort of thinks nerves, or not everyone, but people sort of associate nerves as being a bad thing. I think it just means you care. Like, it doesn't mean, it's definitely not a bad thing. It's how you kind of use that to then sort of channel a good outcome, I guess. Like, if you can kind of focus on, they've all played, like, whoever's in the team, they've obviously all had good results this year to obviously get themselves in the team. So and people are all very different, so they all need to kind of do whatever makes them individually play their best golf, whether that might be the same as someone else. But if it's not, and they need to do something else, whether that's going to bed at 9 o'clock, whatever it is, like, have an early night, or whether someone doesn't like to go to bed early and someone likes to get up really early, or vice versa, or someone likes to practice for hours after their round and someone doesn't. Like, if someone just likes to do a few little checks and then they feel ready for the next day, just do what you want to do, within reason, obviously. But as I said, they've obviously done their own things leading up to this to get picked. So just kind of stick to what they know, and what they know makes them play their best golf, I guess.
And are you sort of saying that maybe partly from the perspective of having been captain before, and that's maybe what was said onto you, so you've kind of gotten another leadership example as well as kind of...
Yes and no. I think more in the sense of I've been in teams where people think they need to do everything. They get to the event and they almost change what they've been doing because they think people are expecting more of them and they need to do other things. Whereas, well, within reason, I don't really mind what they do as long as they do everything that they know makes them play their best golf, and that they then don't start doing random new things just because they think someone wants them to do that.
Sometimes something I've found hard in the past when it comes to, and again, you know, the level of golf that I tend to play and that I enjoy the most tends to be, you know, less competitive and more just friendly and things. But like every year I tend to do a Ryder Cup themed thing with friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And I love it because I love the competitive element of a team versus a team. Yeah. But the interesting thing I find is that I actually, and you hear a lot of pros talk about this in terms of the Ryder Cup or maybe the Solheim Cup as well, for example, say, is one of the few times in a year where the dynamic changes because you're an individual competitor for most of the year.
Going into a team.
And I just, you know, I kind of, I'm not comparing myself to a professional golfer. Just humor me for a second here. But it's like when I find myself in that environment, or even when I'm just like, I extend being a team player to actually helping someone else find their ball or whatever. I don't know. I'm so involved in my own process sometimes. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, but that's what I mean in the sense that people are different.
Yeah. Like,
to play your best, it might even be that you just need to be a little bit selfish. To play your best golf, you can't worry about everyone else whilst you're doing your warm-up or whilst you're doing your after-round practice or even whilst you're playing your game. Once you've done everything, then you can go and, I don't know, help someone do whatever. But when you're, whatever you need to do, whatever makes you play your best golf, obviously not at the detriment of someone else, mm-hmm. but... Like you said, if that means that you need to focus and concentrate, yes, help them look for their ball because that's just being a decent human. But do you know what I mean? You don't have to then go over the top.
Note to self, I'll do that more often for my playing partners. Yeah. So.
But that's just sort of general etiquette, isn't it? But yeah, you don't need to, you shouldn't sort of change how you normally behave just for, 5 days, 4 days out of the year? Because you're now part of a team.
Do what got you here in the first place.
Absolutely, yeah.
Essentially,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Play to your strengths kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice one. Just maybe one of the final kind of sections or segments I like to bring up and then pass it over to you if there was anything you wanted to, whether it's ask me or bring up that I haven't asked you about, but it's this cut it out piece I was telling you about before. Yeah. So if there was anything at all that you could change about golf, what would it be?
Oh, I think, we kind of touched on it earlier when I was saying, I don't know if it was when we were recording or before when we were talking, but in terms of having, I think, I was going to say not have a dress code. I think you should have a dress code in the sense of you should look reasonably smart, but I don't think it should be as strict as it is. Like if you've got sports clothes on, you're playing a sport, like that's absolutely fine, isn't it? Like shorts and a t-shirt to go and play sport. No other sport are you going to get told, absolutely not. You haven't got a collar, you haven't got your shirt tucked in, you can't play. I think as long as you're respecting the golf course and you're not obviously not sort of damaging things and stuff, what harm is it? It's going to get more people into playing. It's going to get more people to feel a lot more relaxed. Like my women's class, I've said to them, we're on the driving range, you can wear whatever you want. As long as you're comfy, you're not going to be worrying about what you're wearing. You're going to be focused on playing golf, which is... That's the idea of it, isn't it? Getting more people to play and get more people to enjoy it. Whereas, and trying to get away from the sort of misconception, I guess, to a certain extent, that it's stuffy and it's elitist. And yes, it absolutely was. But my experience, especially being at the Park Golf Club, is not that. It's very chilled down here. Everyone is welcome, and they very much stand by that. Like, my bosses and the owners are very much, as long as you respect our sort of facility, you can whoever wants to come down can, which I think it should be.
So this is a good, let's maybe dive into this a bit more, because I've got a theory on why somewhere like Park Golf Club is better able to and is better delivering on some of these things. But why do you think this place is doing that well compared with...
I think they're very forward thinking, and by no means we perfect down here, or I'd say we, not that I make decisions down here, but as in my bosses and the owners, we don't get everything right. But I think their heart's in the right place. So, and they want it to, they are very forward thinking. They want to encourage more people to be here. They want more people to be involved. We're all golfers down here for a start. Everyone's played golf as rather than just sort of coming at it from a business mind. So we've all loved it or love it, have loved it or still love it at some points in your life or currently. So getting people in sort of, obviously, if more people play golf, I get that they're going to make more money. That's obviously going to help as well. But they are very much, they just want everyone to enjoy what we've enjoyed as well. And if we can be the facility to do that, they're constantly improving it down here, which is only going to help people better themselves and get involved in it and feel more like they belong here, I guess, rather than feeling like, oh no, I can't possibly go and play golf. No one's played golf in my family before. Oh, like, no, I don't belong. It was not like that down here. It's very sort of welcoming. Like the women in my group have said that it's a lot nicer and a lot more chilled than they thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm with you in all of that, really. And I think my theory is a proprietor-owned golf club like this one is versus a members-run golf club is the big difference here. You know, and as we've been talking about beforehand, having spent time on a board at a members-run golf club, it just instantly changes the dynamics because everyone has an opinion. And unfortunately, depending on who you are as a member, that opinion seems to carry more weight than it does if you're a different member. And it becomes very, very difficult to make progress because, like, you know, certain people will dig their heels in and things. But I think something you said there makes me think back to at that time that I was on the board there. There was a webinar that was delivered by Wales Golf where the lady's name escapes me now, but she's an expert in diversity and inclusion, for example, in golf, in sport, I think, and working with sporting organisations and governing bodies. And there was a line that she used in there, which ties to something you just said, Jordan, about how it sounds almost a bit cynical and clinical when you say it, but it's diversity and inclusion is actually good for business. And I think when you've got the marriage of, I say that without, you know, I don't know who the owner here is, but in a general sense of when you're an entrepreneur, when you marry that up with, you know, business sense with personal values of making a difference and societal impact and things. I think, for instance, something that jumps off to me is how you personally, as well as the club, has welcomed in, you know, Muslim golfers and doing
the Ramadan.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Yeah.
We did night golf throughout sort of the month of Ramadan. So four Friday nights, we had the range closes here in the winter. The range closes here at 8 o'clock, but we came back and we opened up again from sort of anything from 10:30 through to about like half one in the morning. So they'd break fast and do their prayers and then they'd come here. So it gave them something to do because obviously it's more of a community thing for them. They don't want to break fast, do their prayers, and then go straight to sleep. It's part of being together. So it was something for them to do that they were together then that was fun. And we did it, it was four Fridays. As the month went on, it was slightly later each night. But we had probably up to 100-odd people here. But loads of them had never played golf before. Or if they had, they'd played golf the year before because we did the same thing the year before. So I think this is our third year doing it now. And it's just been more every single time we've done it, which is great.
And out of interest, with the time that you've been working with that group, did they ever say anything to you about, you know, in the same way you were giving the example of that woman before who was saying, oh, I can't wear this or I don't feel I fit in here. Have they ever said anything to you which has suggested that they would have not necessarily felt comfortable in golf or didn't see themselves as belonging? Or is it a different kind of scenario or context for them?
not necessarily that they don't belong, but I think they just kind of, because it's such a community for them, and if I kind of got the impression that if sort of their mum and dad hadn't done it or their grandparents hadn't done it, then they just thought that they didn't do it. They would they never do even, it.
It wouldn't appear on their radar, yeah, essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah, so yeah. Not necessarily that they couldn't do it, but it was just never a thought that they would do it. Whereas like we did, myself and Joe were the coaches for the night, and we had like the volunteers from Wales Golf come down, or the staff from Wales Golf come down and obviously help out. But I say, me and Joe, I'll use that in a loose term. Yes, we helped them, but it was more just sort of getting them started, like just to, so they could try it. And some of them were great. Like in terms of just basic hand-eye coordination, they could all hit the ball pretty much. And even like there was lots of young kids in there, as well as all the way up to sort of older sort of guys, I guess, but had never done it before. But again, not because they didn't, I don't think necessarily think they couldn't, but they just never, they'd never had the opportunity to do it. It's probably a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Whereas it was free for them. They could do whatever they wanted within reason. Obviously they could try little bits. I mean, yeah. And it was great. It was great for us. And they seemed to enjoy it. They kept coming back every week. So
yeah, completely. And I think it's very encouraging that there's activities like that happening. I think, you know, it says a lot for this golf club that mm-hmm. that they're taking a lead on these things.
Yeah.
I think the short game area here as well, very, very good.
Yeah.
You know, it's held up as a, absolutely, again, in the time that I've been working with colleagues in Wales Golf mm-hmm. and things, and how, you know, when they launched that, however long ago it was, because I don't know, I mean, you've probably traveled around more of Wales than I have playing golf, but at least in mid Wales where I am, there's very, very few places that have really good short game facilities. And what's the stat about how many of your shots get played within the short game?
Well, exactly. I mean? Yeah, if you think about it,
yeah.
It's, we had it got built in COVID times, actually. They did a lot of improvements here throughout COVID. I guess they kind of took the opportunity that they could, because obviously no one was here, to develop everything. And that got built in COVID then, with sort of in partnership with Wales Golf, because it's an all-inclusive short game area. So there's wheelchair access, there's like the bunkers on the one side, it's like a gradual slope, so everyone can get into it. You don't have to step down into it. And same with the green, obviously there's no, everyone can access it basically. So it's great. Like I've never come across a facility like it. And because it's all weather as well, and it's floodlit, so what's not to like?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's £150 a year for a membership of the short game area as well, which
yeah.
I think is...
And you get discount on the range with that and everything. Yeah. So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, totally. No, it's really good. Cool. Well, I think I'm pretty much done with my line of questioning, Jordan. So anything you would like to share or talk about or ask or whatever before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think you've covered everything, really, haven't you? Just thank you for having me, I guess.
Thank you for agreeing to it.
That's absolutely
so
fine.
It's been great. I think the opportunities where I can meet people in person where they are and have the conversation always yields a much richer conversation, mm-hmm. I think, as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Do remember to follow us on your podcast platform of choice. And if you would like to get in touch with the show, you can email me. My email address is in the show notes. Or alternatively, if you listen on Spotify, for example, you can use the comments feature to drop a few words about what you liked about this episode or what you like about the show, or indeed any feedback or ideas for future episodes. But until the next time, remember to always embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.